No, and I had a fight, in case you were wondering.
I didn't ask.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Beverly Hills 90210. Today's episode, Season 10, Episode 12, Nine Yolks Whipped Lightly. Okay. Now here are your hosts, Tara Ariano and Sarah Debating.
I'd love to say that title makes sense. It does, kind of, but it's still just dumb.
That title is like, what if Quentin Tarantino did another one of those anthology movies where they're all vignettes that take place in one room, and mine's going to be called Nine Yolks Whipped Lightly.
A sentient eggnog.
Hi.
Hello.
Shall we?
No, let's end it there. Goodbye.
Okay.
We could.
Let's start with our C plot. Steve tries to make Janet's parents act right. At a tree lot, Steve is going daddishly overboard trying to capture the moment on video while Janet tries to be patient. Apparently, he's also brought David and Dylan officially to help carry a tree for the center, but David suspects to make sure they're both okay with neither of them being with Gina. And they make a show of hugging so that Steve can get it on camera, which is a little funny. Also, do you want to talk a little bit about Dylan's pants in this scene, Sarah?
Ponce's pants.
They are Ponce's pants.
They literally are Ponce's pants. I don't know what is happening with these pants. You'll see this in our visual aids.
You should explain Ponce's pants. Okay, but there's a show called Clone High in which Luke Cage, oh my God.
Luke Perry, not Luke Cage.
In which Luke Cage
is a different show.
Luke Perry, as Dylan. He is a clone of Ponce de Leon, and he has kooky, you know, Spanish explorer pants on, and they're Ponce's pants.
And they are mourned by the clone of JFK. Ponce's pants. So his pants, I think they're just like fairly standard issue, like black pleated Dockers. Mm-hmm. I don't know what is happening, but between like this camera angle, and I guess they were like, there was some kind of fan on the Christmas tree lot that inflated them, but he's sort of facing away and turning like towards the camera. So you're looking at him from the side, and like he has his usual stick insect waist. Mm-hmm. But the pants are simultaneously clinging to his butt and making it look like he has a little bubble butt, which we have seen no evidence of this ever. So it must be the light. And then the pants are just like wider than David pants. Like they are, you expect the Paula Chanel's to come running out of the right leg. It's definitely this like Mother Ginger hoop skirt containing multitudes situation.
Yeah.
But like, I mean, at least he doesn't have the front of his shirt hiked up and he's scratching his belly, but it's just very, it's very weird. Like they're clinging to every inch of his cheeks, but then they're massive on the bottom. I don't get it. Physicists, take a look. Explain to me what's happening.
Yeah, my man got an Oakland booty. It seriously is like he's wearing a fake drag ass. It looks in these pants like it's so much bigger than any ass we've ever seen him have.
Yeah, it's really exists. Weird. It's very bizarre. I couldn't stop looking at it, and then I started to feel weird. And then I just was like, all right, I'm putting some arrows, and let's let the readers explain what's happening. So good luck, y'all.
Yeah. Anyway, then Janet elsewhere accidentally knocks over the tree she's picking out for the Walsh house and reveals her parents behind it. Apparently, they all three fell out so much that her mother doesn't even know that Maddie has been born. So Janet introduces them. Mrs. Susner remembers that Janet's predicted due date hasn't actually even arrived yet, so they all get into it in clip two.
She was premature.
Is she all right?
Yeah, there were some complications, but she's all right. She's perfect. She's so beautiful.
They can ring you up now. The tree's on your car, but you're blocking four others,
right? Thank you.
Merry Christmas.
We've done a paternity test. The father is in fact Zamfir, master of the pamphlet.
This is why I called for the clip, because like her parents are Asian. So by all means, let's put a Zen flute from Mount Fujiyama in there. Fuck off.
Yeah. Yeah. It to me, it sounds more Peruvian than Asian, but, you know, they were trying, I guess.
Or, you know, that time on Survivor when someone actually died.
Right.
Just kidding. That wasn't a thing.
So later, Steve shades Janet's homemade eggnog, and Janet sadly says her mother's was amazing and Janet can't get the recipe right. And on Steve's urging, she calls her mother and invites both her parents over for dinner the next night. And after that dinner, Steve is trying to bond with Mr. Susna about the Stanford game, but both of Janet's parents are more interested in gazing at the baby. This is also where we learn that Steve and Janet have both taken parental leave until the first of the year, and good fucking luck to the temporary editor who is replacing both of them. And when they ask for baby photos,
that's
the only ones...
not how papers work, just no. In case you thought that maybe this was the one time that the show understood how papers work. You don't... get a paper sitter for the holidays.
No. I mean, like, none of this is how papers work. You could not put out even a shit ass rag like theirs with only two people on staff. But,
yeah,
you know.
Exactly.
So when the Susan has asked for baby photos, the only ones at hand are of the wedding. And suddenly, before dessert has even been served, Janet's parents have to go and Janet is sad. And then the Susnas get home from somewhere to find Steve waiting on their stoop another day. He tries to relate to them as a fellow parent and then guilts them about their lack of consistency with Janet. He's sure Maddie will do things in her life that he doesn't like, but he'll never give her affection and then take it away, and he won't let Janet's parents do it either. When Mr. Susna shoves past him, Steve invites them to stop by the next day, which is Christmas. Whenever they want, but it's their last chance. What will happen? We're going to leave them here and get back to them in the A plot. On to the B plot. Matt's ring and Dylan's rage offer Kelly two very different options. So Kelly brings a bunch of presents to the center where she meets Gay Andrew and a client kid named RJ. Apparently they ran a toy drive at the store. And then Dylan brings up her weird proposal. She objects to the characterization, even though it's exactly how she described it to Donna, and says she just wanted to make Dylan take things more seriously. Anyway, she gets all flustered and defensive, but is saved from justifying her actions by a local crank in clip 3.
Hey, are you the ass who organized the drug addict meetings?
They're support group meetings, and yeah, I volunteer.
Yo, thanks for bringing the junkies into the neighborhood. I especially like the styrofoam cups and cigarette butts they leave on my lawn.
Yeah, they smoke like chimneys after a meeting, I know.
Yeah, trading one addiction for another.
We will clean up the cups and the cigarette butts today, and I promise I'll talk to them.
Well, how long before they trade back and I'm stepping on a used needle?
You've given us a lot to think about. Hey, it's that guy.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of take his point. It is rude when people leave trash on your yard, but I also have to think there's probably a parking lot around this space that they would be in more so than like just some dude's lawn. So whatever.
Yeah. Also, I don't know why they're not using the name NA, but the anonymous meetings police that shit like, whoa.
Yeah.
That would never happen. So no.
I mean, all I know is what I see on Mom, and I agree, they are very tidy. Sometime later, Dylan is helping run a Christmas party for the kids at the center when the same crank comes in and starts barking at him about the center bringing down property values. Dylan tries to get the guy to the office to talk about it, but he has brought a prop, a bag of center trash that dissuaded a couple from even looking at his house, which apparently is for sale. By now, a crowd of kids has gathered, but when Dylan tells the crank that he's scaring them, things escalate further in clip 4.
Yeah, I seen the parents who come and go from the center. Believe me, these kids are no strangers to garbage. You got a lawsuit on your hands. I got witnesses.
So that was Dylan punching the guy and the kids all gasping because it was in front of like 10 small children. Not cool, Dylan.
No. Also, this guy outweighs you by a factor of something. I don't know how we got to this place where like broody poet guy is now like brawly poet guy.
Yeah.
But he continues to weigh 132 pounds in all his clothes and a pair of boots. Could we not?
Yeah. Yeah, it's not great.
The answer is no, we could not. Not. Sigh.
But also, I will say, at least this is like the one instance when a gang guy on this show punched someone and they didn't actually fall down. Like, he stays on his feet. He gets a bloody nose, but he doesn't get knocked out.
Yeah.
Anyway, Dylan tries to walk it back by telling the kids that what they all just saw him do was wrong, but RJ is probably scarred for life, or so the editing and the panicky score would have us believe. So it takes until one whole scene into the second act of the episode for us to see Matt at all here in a meeting with a client we've never seen before, whining about IP related to a restaurant. Matt warns the guy it'll be a tough case to win and he doesn't work on contingency, but the guy wants to pursue it anyway and has brought a check for the $15,000 retainer. Matt considers the check and makes a kind of funny face at it, which I made a GIF. And as his flush new client leaves, Kelly scurries in to ask if they can push their dinner because she has shopping to do. He exposits that everyone in the gang agreed only to get presents for Maddie, which, why even that? She's not even a month old. She don't care, but whatever. Kelly still has to get things for Matt. Little things per their agreement. Matt, kind of indicating the check without showing her the amount, says he's going for quality over quantity and asks what one thing she wants. But she refuses to give him any direction and makes a very un-Christmassy face at the thought of the robe he implies he's getting for her. And of course, Sarah captured that. It's in the visual aids.
Yeah.
As an encapsulation of their whole relationship, as Sarah labeled the pic.
We're about to hear another encapsulation of their relationship.
Oh my God. Okay, so Andrew has met up with Dylan at the Peach Pit to say that the crank has a point, which Dylan kind of strengthened by punching him, so Andrew is canceling the not NA meetings and will not even let Dylan pay for his takeout order. Speaking of takeout orders, clip 5.
Can I get a veggie burger with cottage cheese?
No! You can't get that. No one can get that. That is fucking disgusting.
I bet Dave would eat that.
No, I would not.
Oh, really?
My God. Okay.
Cheese? Are you crazy?
Have we forgotten the grape soda incident?
Oh, yeah, true.
Oh, yeah.
True,
true. Dave's like, actually, I did forget about that.
He does still eat cottage cheese, though, on occasion. Like, you have
cottage cheese
it.
Is fine if you drowned it in Tabasco and pepper.
And right. Salsa. Yeah, totally.
But to put, well, first of all, to put cottage cheese on a veggie burger, cottage cheese is not a burger cheese. But second of all, just like from a logistics standpoint, as soon as you bite it, it's going to ooze all out.
Ugh.
And there's going to be like,
unless
there's going to be pigeon shit drops coming out of your burger for the next time.
Or it's like one of those diet platters where you just get the patty and a scoop of cottage cheese and some browning lettuce and a melon slice.
California burger or whatever they call it. California plate.
It's just, I mean, a veggie burger and cottage cheese. That's their relationship. It does not work. They don't go together. Keep them separate.
If it's just the patty and the cheese, I'll let it slide as a plate. But Tara, I'm like seriously disappointed that you think I would eat.
I apologize. I was just more thinking that you eat them both separately.
Okay. I eat a lot of things separately that I would have put together.
Okay, fine. Sorry.
This segment of Will Dave Hate This. Bunsy wins again.
This has been again with this. Cottage cheeseburgers.
Oh, cottage cheeseburger. Nope.
So Kelly has overheard the end of Dylan and Andrew's conversation. Dylan defends his assault, though not well, after he reveals that it happened in front of the kids. Clip 6.
I paid the guy off. He's not going to press any charges.
That's not the point, Dylan. Those kids look up to you.
Well, listen, I'm not a role model, okay? I give a lot of money. I spend a lot of time at that place.
That is not enough.
With you, it is never enough.
So stop knowing her. She's a cunt. Let it go. I mean, she's not wrong, but like, really?
Yeah. Although to his point, Sarah had captured an earlier shot where he's like directing someone where to put the Christmas tree. And like he's doing hand motions and RJ is beside him doing the same ones. And it's very cute.
Yeah.
Like clearly he is a role model, whether he wants to be or not. Sorry.
Mm.
So Dylan has to call around to find an alternative meeting place for the not NA meetings and does so rudely pacing around Andrew's office, even though he's using a cordless phone. And suddenly, some broad runs in to tell Andrew one of the kids is hurt and everyone takes off to learn the issue is that RJ, Dylan's number one fan, punched the kid because he cheated at foosball. Dylan tries to lecture RJ about hitting people, but RJ's like, how come you get to? Which, good point.
And Dylan he's rich, that's why.
Well, pretty much,
take
yeah.
A note. this will be useful later.
If also, you don't have
how
a slush fund
at
to
foosball.
Yeah, pick it up with your hand? I don't know.
I don't know.
So Dylan's looking for a new location for his meeting still when RJ comes in to see if Dylan will play foosball with him since now none of the other kids will. Also, now Justin's mom, his victim, told him that Justin's too scared to come to the center anymore because of RJ. Dylan is sorry he hit that guy and very sorry RJ saw it. He lost control and used his fists to solve a problem instead of his brain. And he was embarrassed afterward, and maybe RJ was too, and maybe if they go apologize to Justin, he'll understand. Presumably that happens. We don't see it, which no one is mad. It's fine.
No. I'm glad everything worked out, Davey. The fuck is this plot line?
So Dylan and David later are watching The Rock on WrestleMania, because it's the past, when the subject turns to David's recent dinner with the disgustingly happy couple, Matt and Kelly. And Dylan tells him about Kelly's non-proposal. And David is like, what if she meant it? And when Dylan says she didn't, plus David just saw her with Matt, David pushes until Dylan says that if Kelly forced the issue, he would turn her down and then regret it for the rest of his life. So exactly what did happen, I guess. Like, that's what he said. So then Matt and Kelly decorate her tree and contrast their Christmas traditions. And while I hate to agree with late era Kelly on anything, she is right. The tinsel is a scourge.
Yeah, I mean, as a pet owner, like, I haven't had tinsel in my home since, like, Clinton was president, so.
No.
Yeah, Team Kelly, reluctantly.
You only have to see a piece of tinsel hanging out of one cat's butthole. No, no tinsel. And I have, and no, I don't mean Kelly for once. Anyway, Kelly gets Matt to agree to her tradition of opening one gift on Christmas Eve. Hers for him is a Thomas guy because he's always getting lost. And say it with me, it's the past. His gift for her is a ring. She is stunned. But when he busts it out, she gives him her hand even before he has officially proposed. But then he does and she accepts. Oh, boy. This was a mistake for everyone, but we'll pick back up with them on Christmas Day as well in the A plot.
It's a pretty nice ring for this show.
It actually is
totally fugazi looking. So
no,
well
for
done.
Once, yeah, you yeah. can see it in the visual aids, like the presentation of the ring and like the faces that she makes, which are like she's excited. But anyway, I won't try and describe it. Jenny Garth actually does some nice work here.
Yeah.
And we will get back to them in the A-plot, but first, we have a message for Karen.
Kyla, Lori, and Leah tell us that longtime listener Karen loves holiday decorations, the labor movement, door knocking for political campaigns, but above all, libraries, in which Karen has worked for years.
And to mark the occasion of Karen's birthday, we've made a list of 5 library services and the specific gangsters who should most urgently avail themselves of them. Just a note. Obviously, not all of these services may be available at your public library, but they were available at mine, Austin Public Library. Shout out them. Proceed.
Number 1, instead of getting way out of her depth trying to advocate for the rights of sweatshop workers, Donna could drive them to free citizenship classes.
Number 2, David could sample some albums in a library listening room and arrive at the conclusion we all reached a long time ago that he needs to give up on his own dreams of music stardom.
Even though they are so precious to him. Number 3, Janet might not think that Maddie is ready to be exposed to early literacy education, but Steve is not going to take that chance.
Number 4, Noah's probably not so much with the reading, but we think he'd enjoy a free puppet show.
And number 5, let's get Gina in a book club so that she can meet people outside the gang. Please.
On behalf of Lori, Leah, and Kyla, and of course, all of us.
Happy birthday, Karen!
And now our A-plot. Gina and the Martins still aren't doing great. And it's Christmas! Gina has agreed, apparently under duress, to join Donna for a visit to the Martins. When Dr. Martin opens the door, she is stiff and weird and not sure how to greet him, but he just reaches out and hugs her, and she allows it willingly enough, but still looks like very freaked out. Felice is trying to act normal and hostessy, but Dr. Martin is eager to embark on this new phase of all their lives, starting with Gina joining them on Christmas Day. Like, wouldn't she have done that anyway. She is a relative and she's in town. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, dumb baby Donna wants them to go to the Martin's Christmas Eve party, stay over, and wake up together Christmas morning because they're eight. What? But Felice is clearly against it, first saying that Donna probably wants to spend her birthday with Noah and then warning Gina that no one their age will be at the party. And then Dr. Martin gets nervous too. Clip 7.
Gina, this is all new to us, and it could really be awkward.
How would we introduce you?
As your daughter.
Honey, we're expecting over 100 people there, some of them we barely even know. I want to find the right way and the right time to do this.
Ryan, I understand. I mean, you've only had 24 years to figure it out. I don't want to rush you. Gina. Nice. Gina, wait a second. Look, what do you care about a stupid party with a bunch of strangers?
Look, you should just make your choice right now.
I can't go against my dad, and neither should you.
Well, congratulations, you're an only child again.
Okay, I can't go against my dad, and neither should you, is a very fast flip, even for Donna. Like, she's been the prime mover of all of this, and now she's like, well, I guess we'll just do what they say. Like, what?
Also, your dad is not Tony Soprano. Also, right. Shortly after this, this, of course, congrats, you're an only child again. Punch.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, Donna feels bad silently. So then Noah comes to the store to give Donna an early birthday present, tickets to Paris on Christmas Day. The last we heard, he was too broke to make rent on the club, but sure.
Also, they were maybe breaking up, but I guess they tabled that conversation until we could all hear it a week later.
Yeah.
Fucking show.
So she can't help looking conflicted, which he thinks is about her father's mistakes, but is actually about his Harvard lie, which is apparently much more elaborate than we realized in the last episode, as we now hear in clip 8.
I can't stop thinking about how you told me about the Harvard Yale games, the music scene at Cambridge.
I told you I had an accident and my girlfriend died, okay? I told you it changed my life, I just didn't tell you how much.
I know.
The flute!
Just you let
I
your
can't.
Parents buy you out of trouble.
I was 18 years old.
And how many drinks had you had that night?
A few beers. Why are you doing this?
Let's talk about it later.
I mean, before I thought it was more of a lie of omission, the whole Harvard thing, like, you know, so someone made an assumption and he never corrected them, like when they heard right. where he lived or something. But like, if he was telling her about parties and shit, like, okay, dude, like you have a problem.
Well, but also, why give this whole backstory about, like, just focus on the part where he was like, there was an accident and my fiance is what we heard when he first showed up died. Right. Actually, yeah. What happened is that you drunk drove her to death, it sounds yes. like. So why don't yes. we focus on that as Donna's issue? Like, we all know what's happening. We all know that the chess board is being, like, reset up so that she and David can end up together.
Yes.
Got it.
Yeah.
It is not necessary to make her dudgeon about this. That she's like, how dare you intrude on the hallowed precincts of the, like, what else did you lie to me about? Like, he right. raped Valerie. Yeah. Yeah.
Also, he has drunk driven in the time he's been dating her. Like, that yeah. happened after, right after his dad died. Like, this is not behavior that he has left in the past. I mean, you know, maybe at that time he could say, like, well, he was under stress or whatever, but like, still, if killing someone driving drunk isn't enough to scare you straight forever, like, you do have problems you are not acknowledging.
Yeah, including that you tried to go to an AA meeting, and by tried, I mean you stood outside and drank from airline bottles of booze, like...
And it never came up again, ever.
Yeah. So, yeah. I just wish that they were even trying a little... Mm-hmm. To cover this positioning, like, why is this the part that you care about?
Exactly.
Yeah. And there's, like, all this mall tootling in the background.
I know.
Because that's supposed to be a comment on how commercialism intrudes into even our private moments. No, it's just a shitty choice by the music coordinator. Cut.
Yeah. It's just that it's that because we know it's the Christmas episode instead of the usual doo-wop music that is underscoring, like, yes, people finding out that they had miscarriages at the Peach Pit or whatever the fuck.
Anyway. Seriously, like, joy to the world. Donna is getting back together with David eventually.
Anyway, Noah leaves and Donna asks Kelly how many drinks it takes to be over the legal limit, even though that's like the one problem that Kelly has never had herself. Anyway, Donna doesn't know what to believe from anyone anymore. Ugh. Gina is in the hotel bar recapping the Martin meeting to David when he looks over her shoulder and sees Felice talking to a bellman. He offers to stay, but Gina will take this one alone. And showing growth, he apparently called her for this meeting to make sure that after everything that happened, they were still friends. And she's happy to say they are. David makes his exit as Felice comes over, starting out by saying she felt for Gina earlier, what with all that talk of the party. Gina waves that off, saying it was Donna's thing and she doesn't really care about the party. But then Felice reaches for her purse and we see this is going where we all knew it was.
There's
eventually
the
going
Felice
to end
we
up.
Know.
Yep. And clip nine.
Well, you know, it's not an isolated incident.
Right. You know, I'm sorry. It's just...
And I don't know how much you want us all to endure before we get down to the real issue.
Oh, well, what's that?
Tell me what you want. How much?
What is it that you think you're buying?
My husband has an obligation to you.
You couldn't even make a dent.
It's a pretty good line. There's a scene. There's a scene like shortly after this with Dr. Martin and Gina. I don't think we have a clip from it, but it's actually pretty good.
Well, and this is where we are now. So yeah, the next day, Felice opens the door of the Martin man's to Gina, who nervously blurts that she's there to see her father. Felice calls him to the door, and as she continues loitering around, Gina tells Dr. Martin she doesn't want his money or his pity. And Dr. Martin finally asks Felice to give them some privacy, but then defends her, saying she just asked in the wrong way. No big deal. Like how much money Gina wanted. But both he and Felice are wondering what Gina expects from him. She says she doesn't know. He knows Gina had a father, but she says he was a bedtime story that Bobby told her. The really tall guy in the only photo that Gina has of herself at age 5. She barely remembers the day that Frank died. Doctor doesn't know where he would start being Gina's father since he missed all the big milestones of her life, and he has belatedly realized he probably should have stepped up when Frank died. You think?
Like, yeah.
You wouldn't have even had, I think we talked about this in the last episode too, but like, you wouldn't have had to say what your biological relationship actually is in order to be more in her life or help her.
Yeah, it's true.
Anyway, Donna has told Dr. Martin that Gina is living in a very big fancy hotel, and she agrees that it is just like she always wanted, though neither of them mentions who's actually paying for it.
I was kind of hoping we would get some intel on that. Nah.
Mm-mm, nope. And then she gets around to saying she doesn't expect anything from him and leaves. I agree that that scene is good. It's handled well.
Yeah, it's and he's, you know, that he's a good actor, that guy.
Yeah.
He manages to portray like not having any disappointment in his life choices, despite being married to the biggest battle axe in the Zip and having spawned the biggest moron.
Yes. Yeah.
And who saved his life when he had a stroke? Fucking David. Like, dude, yeah. You're doing it wrong. But he's good. And I have to say, Vanessa Marsil, I really did not remember her being any good at all, but she gets some fucking garbage and she's really pretty good.
Yeah, this is the thing, and we've talked about this before too with like the newer arrivals, her and Daniel Cosgrove both, like, because they're brand new, they're not worn down from having played these characters like since they were actual children, you know. Like they bring more to it, they're trying more, you know.
Yeah, like at all.
Yeah, exactly. What I'm waiting for is for someone to say, like, Donna has a trust fund, because clearly she does. Like, she obviously must have had something in order to start the store. But, like, just say, you know, we're going to give Gina the same one, or we're going to split Donna's in half or something. Like, you know, whatever. Donna comes into her place loaded with groceries. Her parents are coming over for breakfast the next day to talk about Gina, and she thinks it'll be good to get things out in the open and wants that for her and Noah as well. She wants to look at any records of the incident and if he thinks he was drunk, and he gets hilariously defensive. Clip 10.
When is the last time you saw me take a drink?
Probably in the last scene, shithead.
You drink all the time. You work in a bar.
The only character who drinks more than you is the guy who dragged Brandon to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting in the seventh episode, Dylan McKay.
Yep. So Donna then has to point out what we all have been pointing out, which is he has tended to have problems with alcohol. And he snaps that he's had 5 years to think about it and storms off like, okay, like how many years has it been since you got arrested for a DUI, you fucking idiot? Anyway, the next morning, Donna's overslept so much that she's still in her pajamas when her parents show up and nothing is ready. She gets a call from Noah, who apparently didn't come home the night before, and mumbles to Felice that they had a fight, as we heard up top. She then announces that Noah told a lie that made her wonder if she knew who he was anymore. Sound familiar? And neither of them really has anything to say to that.
Because they don't care.
No, they don't. She adds that Gina is hurting and Dr. Martin needs to fix it, since that's what dads do. And Felice then tries to tell Donna to be more understanding of the bad choices that all her loved ones make, as though Felice gives a shit whether Donna and Noah break up. Like, honestly, this is your play? Come on.
Yeah, really.
So then Donna finds Noah at the club and tells him she's realized her parents were under pressures she couldn't begin to understand, and maybe so was Noah. Oh my God, Donna, get therapy. Jesus Christ.
Well, really.
She gets Noah wanting to run away from the accident, since the truth made her want to run away from him and also from her father and Felice and Gina. Noah wouldn't blame her if she cut them all off, but Donna whines that she loves him and wants to forget all this. At Christmas morning slash her birthday, Noah wakes Donna up with a croissant with a candle in it. Kelly comes in after her words to gloat about her ring. She and Matt are going to call their parents, but keep the news quiet until dinner at the Walsh house later. And they leave, and Noah asks what Donna wished for. She mopes that she wished they had met when they were 17 before the accident, because it would have changed everything. Tough wish from David's perspective, but okay.
Yeah, seriously. Plus, I don't think Noah wants that, because you did not decide to lose your virginity until you were 22.
True. But Noah sadly tells her to wish for something she can actually have. And at the Walsh house, Gina poutily asks Donna how her parents' party was, and Donna says she skipped it because Gina wasn't there. It also sounded like a real boring bummer, but Donna doesn't say that part. Dylan then follows Kelly into the kitchen to tell her he's thought about it, and she's right. He doesn't always think his actions through to their likely outcomes, but he's going to change. Steve pops in to tell them there's about to be a toast in the other room, so Kelly tries to extricate herself, but this happens first. Clip 11.
I'm glad for you.
It's not all about me. It's about us. About how, what seems to go wrong for us? You know, maybe it's time that we got it right. Kelly, come on. Matt's looking for you.
Oh, boy. Dylan, your timing is not so good.
No. Also, that rock is really big. Like, please have some awareness of your surroundings.
I guess I buy that a man might not necessarily notice that.
Yeah, that's true. Especially Dylan.
Right. So the reason Matt was looking for Kelly was so he could announce to everyone that they're getting married. Most people are happy. Gina does a great shock take toward Dylan, who just looks resigned. There's a gif of this, of course, in our visual aids. And Dylan then hoarsely tells Matt he's a very lucky man. And Donna yanks Kelly out by lying that she has something in her teeth, but really to ask about her feelings for Dylan. And here is Kelly's current take. Clip 12.
Okay, stop. No. You know he loves you? When it suits Dylan. When I don't ask too much of him.
How do you feel about him?
There are times when I think he could be the one. If things were different. If privilege and money and charm didn't make walking away from problems so easy for him.
And people change all the time. They learn from their mistakes.
Not unless they have to. And sometimes not until it's too late. I love Matt. I love who he is. Not who he's trying to be.
I mean, that's a good line, except you don't love Matt.
No, you don't.
You hate him.
No,
but
well,
you stay with him so that Dylan will figure his shit out, and that seems to be working, but you're going to have to stay with him a little longer because you're absolutely right about who Dylan is.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think she wants to love Matt, but she doesn't. Like,
no.
Because it's the same thing as, like, with her and Brandon all the time. Like, on paper, he's right for her.
Yeah.
But in actuality, he doesn't do it.
Yeah. Also, he's Brandon, but it's a discussion that we've already had 700 times.
Anyway, Dylan, David goes over to try and set up another wrestling bro hang with Dylan, who cuts him off to say that when you live without something long enough, you don't miss it anymore. And then that he has to be somewhere else right now on Christmas.
I feel ya.
And Janet is trying to put the baby down when we hear the doorbell. And of course, it's her parents. They are glad that Steve and Janet found each other and I guess are done being dicks. So good. And Donna finds Noah outside after dinner and says she guesses they should go pack for their trip. Do you want to say a few words about the hoodie she's wearing in this scene, by the way?
It appears to be it's white cashmere, I think. Mm-hmm. It looks very soft.
I think so, too. Yeah.
It has like just like crystal snowflakes appliqued onto it. It's really cute. And it's not cropped, I don't think.
No, it's normal size. The problem is she's wearing it with a maxi skirt.
Yeah.
So she looks like half cute and half a sister wife, but fine.
Yeah. This is one of the less offensive maxi skirts that anyone has had on in this episode. And that hoodie is the most, seriously.
It is very cute. Donna, having brought up packing for their trip, Noah doesn't answer until he's ready to make shit weird, which he does in clip 13.
You know what I wish for on your birthday?
Different sweater.
I actually wish you and I wake up tomorrow in Paris together.
We will.
You wouldn't blame me for the accident, cause that's all it was. It's just an accident, you know?
I told you that I believe you.
That's the thing. No. You're going to try to believe me. You'll try. I know you. Then you start looking for all the signs, you know? And I'm not going to disappoint you. I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to hide anything. I'll still feel you watch me, though. How many beers have you had? Are there any records from the accident? Listen to me. I felt guilty about this thing for years. It took me a long time to get over it. But I did.
So will we.
Understand what I'm saying. I am past it. I can't go through this again. I can't. Not even for you.
What do you want me to say?
That we both already know. That we can't do this anymore. That it's over for us.
Violet!
I mean, the journey here was very weird and made no sense, but fine. I will accept it. They really sold him out making him wear that sweater. It's like
the sweater's really dumb.
The entire cast of Fraggle Rock was thrown in a blender. And he had so much glycerin on board. There's really a lot of crying.
Yeah. It makes me think they put something under his nose because he also sounds super snotty. But yeah, I mean, the first question is how many dudes are going to dump Donna on Christmas / her birthday? Because David did it too in season 4.
Oh, yeah.
But also, you can't say it was just an accident when you were driving drunk. Sorry. Like,
yeah.
Yes, it was. You were not intending to kill her, presumably. But it's that's really absolving yourself of a lot of responsibility that you should not.
And yeah, being like, well, that's what the police decided. Like, you are aware that your parents paid for that decision. You would probably have done time if you were just a poor like everybody else. So stow it.
Yep. Yeah, smiley later. I wish that meant he was leaving the show, but we're so close to the end. I guess they decided it wasn't worth writing him out.
So then Kelly and Matt center. Why not?
God. So then Kelly and Matt schmoop around in his bed talking about how much they love Christmas. She wants to know how long he'd been planning to propose, which because it's St. Kelly, he has to say was since they met. Even during their rough times, he never lost sight of what he wanted. Oh, really? What about when your wife came back? Okay, fine.
Yeah. Are they even technically divorced yet? Probably not. Whatever.
Don't know.
Won't matter. Spoiler.
He claims that no matter how old they get, he'll always see her the same way he does now. Well, maybe he will. Maybe he won't. At the pad, Peach Pit After Dark, Dylan is drinking a Dos Equis and a whiskey and watching the end of It's a Wonderful Life when Noah storms in, grabs a beer, and announces that he's going to be sleeping in the office for a while. Dylan indicates his own glass of brown liquor and says he didn't think Noah drank. What? Since when?
Oh my God, writers. What? At which fuck?
Like, this has never been a thing, ever. No. Like, not even since his arrest has it been a thing. But whatever, at which Noah realizes what he's doing and puts the beer back down, saying a mistake has cost him everything. And we are apparently not joining Dylan on his first slash second drink, clip 14.
Oh, come on. 1, 10, 20. What's the difference? Get over it. That's what I plan to do.
Healthy.
Okay, bad Blake. What? What even is this? Why do we care?
We're so close to the end. This is the last scene. Donna is already boxing up Noah's shit, which we can tell is his shit because the top of the box contains a visible PlayStation and a football.
That's so dumb. I just don't understand. Like, it's like the breaking up version of the grocery bag that always has a baguette and some celery.
Or celery. Yep, totally.
It goes to football. I guess it's a boy who's moving out. Like, thanks for the context. What?
So that's when Gina shows up because apparently Donna called David and he sent Gina. Whatever. Donna is nice about it, but says this isn't really a good time. And Gina tries to cheer her up in a very weird way, saying that when she was having a hard time as a kid, she would fantasize that her dead dad would come save her from Bobby and whichever shitty boyfriend was in the picture at the time. Just a sidebar here. I know that our guest star budget is probably very small at this point, but seriously, how have we not seen Bobby since Gina's real parentage was revealed?
Yeah.
Like, not even to talk to her on the phone. Give me a break.
Yeah. I guess she moved back east with the rest of the Hunter clan.
Right. Anyway, Gina was shocked when Donna told her the truth, but then just came up with another fantasy, which is that her biological father would end up being the dad she always wanted. And Donna says things could still end happily. And Gina, clasping Donna's hand, says maybe it already has. But as you can see in a GIF that I made of this, even as she's doing this, she like can't help looking askance. Like, even Gina doesn't believe this, really, or she thought they could cut. Whatever. Merry Christmas.
Yes. Barf. The Boxing Day sales are coming. Hang in there.
And that's our episode. Let's close it out with our MVP. I want to say the guy that gave Matt 15 grand, except I've already looked ahead and know that this doesn't end well for him. So,
Steve.
Yeah, that's a good one. I'll agree with that.
Yeah.
Steve. And you know what? For all the shit we give him, David really showed some maturity and growth in this episode, too. So
it was the first time in a while that I did not want to kick him in the nuts. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That, to our two former problem children. Good job for once. Mm. Least valuable player. I mean, I should say Felice for the checkbook maneuver, but no one expected her to do anything else. Like,
she could only be what she is. It's true.
That's right. Yep.
I'm going to go with Matt.
I mean, it's dumb.
What are you doing? Yeah.
Well, and for similar reasons, I'm going to say Kelly. Kelly, this is not what you want, and you know it.
Yeah.
All right. Kim Challenge.
Bad, and dangerous to me.
5 ways from this season, this episode, Dylan proves he is mad, bad, and dangerous to know. I mean, he punched a guy.
It's really bad to wear those pants.
It's bad. It's bad to think that you can just buy your way out of trouble, even though all the evidence points in that direction. Not a good way to live.
This isn't really him, but it is mad and bad to leave Dylan in charge of the administration of your NA group.
It's also probably bad to leave him solely responsible for other people's children because he is not up to the task at all.
No.
I think that's 5.
I think it is. Next time on Again With This, Beverly Hills 90210 edition. Excuse me. Next time on Again With This, Melrose Place edition, Kelly isn't the only crossover element on Melrose's first season, as another infestation of stuff has hit the complex. Jane loses her wedding ring during a girl's night out. Allison hates the script Billy's so proud of. Jake does a man-horror scene study to get rid of Kelly. There's no getting rid of the 27-inch rise jeans and Elaine Bennis hair updos in our visual aids, which you can find for this and every other episode of Again With This on our website. That's againwiththispodcast.com. You can follow us on Twitter and see some selections from those visual aids at AWT90210. I'm Felice's blue-collar begone checkbook, Sarah D. Bunting. I am on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is Eggnog of Estrangement, Tara Ariano. She's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And our producer is Meat Substitute Cop, David T. Cole. Talk to you next time.
Hi. You know what to do after the beeparoonie.